guys. These guys are really nice. You wanna know what to do and where to go. When you need someone to guide you, it's nice to have friends beside you. Go with me. Go with me.
What's up, guys? Before we begin this podcast, I want to let you know that we have a new Patreon up with new Patreon episodes. Check out bonus episodes. It's, taking it back to the old school Chad and JT solo episodes. Check it out. Become a patron at patreon.com/ChadGoesDeep. We also have tour dates. We're going to be in your city, so check it out at chadandjt.com. We're also brought to you by the legends at Manscaped. Manscaped, thank you so much for keeping our trims peeved, for looking after our hogs, for making sure our dinks are looking fresh and clean, because splish splash, I was taking a bath and I noticed I have beautiful balls. Friends at Manscaped are turning men's shower dreams into their favorite routine with the all-new Ultra Premium Collection. This new skincare and hair care product lineup is designed to upgrade the everyday man's shower routine from head to toe. Your skin, hair, and armpits deserve only the best. Save big on their newest products by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code GODEEP. Tickle my taint and tell me it's Tuesday. What's up, Stokers of Stoke Nation? This is Chad Kroger coming in with the Going Deep with Chad and JT podcast. I'm here with my compadre, Jean Thomas. What up?
Boom clap, Stokers.
And we're here with the legendary Doug Stanhope. Welcome. Thank you for coming into the pod.
What's up, Doug? How's it going?
Yeah, I asked Olivia Grace, I go, I'm doing this Going Deep podcast. She goes, I think they're like always in character. And then I met you guys beforehand. I go, I don't think that's a character. I think you're really just fucking like 22-year-old fucking barefoot. You walk outside barefoot. And
I like to be in touch with the earth.
Oh, my God. This is the Adam Carolla After Party podcast, where I just did Adam Carolla, and now I just did the whole drive from Glendale going, I should have said this. I should have said that. I should have said this.
It is tough. I'm always doing that.
Well, I'd never talked to that guy since we ruined his fucking man show.
And I'm like, right.
Yeah, like, I didn't know what to expect, and it went fine, but at the same time, I was a little timid, and I had my first cocktail there, so now on my fourth cocktail, I'm like, God damn it, I should have said this.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we're going to get the fire. Yeah, we're going to get you at 100.
I think most of stand-up comedy, I'm assuming you guys are stand-ups.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like half of stand-up comedy is saying shit that you wish you had said in the moment.
Yeah. There's a French phrase for that, right? Like, l'escalier d'esprit means like...
Oh, wow, because we just did a podcast somewhere where someone... Tracy was saying, yeah, there's a French word for that, but she couldn't come up with it.
I mangled it, but I got right. The parts of it and some of them in place. But that's a phenomenon. It happens to the best. I mean, literally happens to the best of us. If it happens to you, it happens to all of us. That's probably good to hear from most people.
And sometimes maybe it's best you didn't say that. Because usually you say, I should have said this when you're drinking later. I should have told my boss this and lost my job and been out on the street.
Do you ever, because you're so known for sort of being unfiltered in your stand-up, do you ever, if you film a special or something, do you ever have any kind of nervousness about putting something out in terms of like the, what you said?
No, because no one knows who I am. I'm at the perfect level of fame where only famous people can get canceled. I mean, I have a bit about it that I'm not going to burn here, but... the idea that... could you get canceled?
I don't know. I think about it a lot. I don't think
but
so.
But then have
yet.
To explain
who I am,
who
to
you
people.
Are.
Right.
All right. Going Deep, Chad and JT. TMZ doesn't have that kind of time.
No, it's probably not worth it. I guess, you know, if I did something, I guess what it is depending on your level of notoriety, you have to do something. Like, I would have to, like, firebomb a preschool to get canceled. Yeah.
Shoot up a school or something.
Right. But if I was rude to a coworker...
Notorious podcaster. Then you'd be famous, according to them. Notorious podcasters shoot up a school.
Exactly. So I'd have to do something at that scale to get canceled. But if I was just
so what's it gonna be? Have you figured it out?
Dude, I was thinking about, because there was that guy who I guess hadn't lived a very exciting life, who hijacked Alaskan Airlines airplane, took it into the air and just like barrel rolled it, and then crashed it on a small island, like in an attempt for significance at the end of his life.
I don't remember this one.
It happened like 5 years ago. Yeah, my friend mentioned it to me.
Wow.
And I really related to him, because I think he was like at the end of his life and he's like, I haven't done anything significant. I'm not going to be a leader of consequence. I'm not going to invent anything, but I want people to remember me. So
yeah, you don't need a bucket list. You need a bucket post-it. Like, this is how I'm going out. I figured out yeah. the perfect way. Barrel roll an Alaskan Airlines jet.
You can hear him over the like the comms or whatever you call it, talking to air traffic control, and he's like, yeah, I'm kind of a boring guy, I haven't done much, and I got a couple screws loose, so I don't think I'm gonna land this thing.
Oh, I bet if we checked our mailing list against his name, he was a fan. That sounds like one of my fans.
Do you we found with our fans, like, we did some shows in Northern California over the weekend that we have. Where? Like San Jose and San Francisco. We did the Improv up there. It's great. Have you been there at the theater?
Yeah, we just did on the. We started Northern, Rohnert Park, then San Jose and Santa Cruz.
And the theater is beautiful there. It was a great venue. But the staff at a lot of these places will tell us, by and large, we have the kindest, gentlest audience.
We get the same thing. Our fans tip on a level that rivals gay fans. They're the biggest tippers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but yeah, my fans are also out of their fucking minds, but they're kind and gentle, unless they're shit-faced and trying to communicate with me. I don't get, like, mean hecklers. I get the, I love you, Stan Hope, right in the middle of the punchline that I just took fucking 7 minutes to arc this story perfectly, right. And then they, I love you so much, dude. Like, you kind of.
But you can't get mad at them because it's love, right? Like, yeah. You almost wish they were hostile, because that would give you something to, you know,
exactly.
Fair to push back against. But
you reap what you sow. Just when you're a drunk, you attract drunks, but you don't necessarily attract a drunk that's as good at it as you. The same way, like, I guess I have a Facebook fan page that's notoriously fucking racist, misogynist, evil, where they try to kind of mimic what I do. But I, like, there's no hatred. I craft, you know, what I do that might be pushing an envelope to someone, where it's like, I can argue everything that I'm doing.
Right, you have black belt skill when it comes to articulating these kind of
ugly points. Yeah, I don't just say cunt retard all over and over again like these guys evidently.
Whoa,
do.
We're off.
It's
I know, I'm doing a bit where I say the R word, and I really work hard to get there in a place so it feels like justified and interesting that I get there. But there's a part of me that's like, or am I just having fun saying it? It's hard to, well, maybe it's both.
Then I would steer your, what's it? No Place Like Home was the special, and unfortunately that bit was as like 22 minutes long, if you hear it in its entirety, about how you retard was the correct word
terminology,
the doctors
right
applied, and they used retarded because they used to say idiot or imbecile.
Which is
but
more
then
hurtful.
We co-opted those words to call our friend when he does something stupid.
Right.
And then they said retarded, which we co-opted, and then it goes on to...
Right, so like neurodivergent will be a pejorative in like 10 years.
Atlantioaxial instability that's usually associated with the trisomy 21 genetic disorder. And then you go, yeah, you put a metal plate in the microwave. Yeah. What do you have, the atlantioaxial instability? Yeah. Just
10-year-olds are going to be lobbing that
yelling,
at each other.
Don't say that words.
Mm-hmm. Which I guess is okay, right? It's okay if language evolves to become unusable at some point by people who aren't aggrieved by whatever that word describes.
I don't know how much of it is bullshit. I don't know how much people are empowered by being able to be triggered. Like,
right.
If that makes sense, like, I can cause a fit. Now this is a thing. You weren't really triggered by it, but now you can... There's powerhood in victim.
Right. Or they've been conditioned to be triggered by it. It's almost like the collective, like, perspective on it gets into all of us. And then we're like my body has been taught to be triggered by that word. So I don't even know if I'm, like, in control of it to a degree.
I'm too old to be trained to have that physical reaction that you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you have to understand, most of this is bullshit. You know that? Like, how much of your actual day and your social circle do you have to worry about how you say something?
I worry about it a lot.
Well, on this, yeah, on the microphone, but I don't know if I'm just so out of, like, I've developed a career and a, you know, an extended family of friends, and like, they're all comedy friendly and no one gets offended about anything or we wouldn't hang out with them. So well, I don't know what your day-to-day life is like, or I'm just
right.
Well, not sacrosanct that I can say anything I want because I hang out with people that are cool.
Well, I think that's part of the draw of getting into comedy too, is that you can be in this no-holds-bar arena where you can say things without fear of judgment or, like, you know, life-impacting consequence. But I also perceive you as a very kind soul.
Absolutely.
Right. You seem to me
the
like
fucking nicest guy in the world.
I get that from you. Yeah. You seem like when I watch your comedy, I think it always has like a kind, gentle heart at the core of it. And there's always a lot of love in your perspective. Yeah. And so I think the words are almost a way to like balance that, right? Like the edges in the words, but the...
I mean, there's so many words. Like now fuck is just a given. Like mm-hmm. What used to be... Again, I'm old. You have to understand that. So I've gone through all these cycles where people, young people think it's new. Priest molestation has been topical at least 4 times in my career, and then it goes away. And all these things.
It's like fashion. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, and people go, oh, this is in the news. Yeah, it's been in the news. And then they forget about it because it doesn't get any clicks anymore. But yeah, there's always compassion and the words. Like, again, you can say fuck all the time now. No one's saying, oh, that's a bad word. Now we have new bad words. And it makes you want to say it.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of it is in LA, the conditioning. There's a sort of been, I feel like in the past like 4 or 5 years, sort of even the social conditioning outside of like podcasting and stuff, where people will have that, will carry that same sensitivity to words into like everyday life. Which I don't feel like exists outside.
As I'm talking, I'm thinking, well, I guess, yeah, your day-to-day life is being around stand-up comics that are younger. That I can get away with shit because I have a built-in audience. But you still have to probably deal with doing fucking shows at the Improv or the Comedy Store where you're playing to not your fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't even feel it as much in stand-up. I feel like, even though people talk about how that's kind of gone away, I do feel like there's like a built-in kind of defense in stand-up if you misstep like with your language, that people are, you're like, look, these are jokes, and it's an attempt at making a point. Yeah. Or finding levity. But I do find in like Chad saying, and just like working in regular professions in Los Angeles, yeah, there's a heightened sensitivity. And I'm not sure it's a bad thing, because I think it's made me more thoughtful, but I do think we're a little too punitive when people make mistakes.
Yeah, but who's the we? What I'm trying to find the way to articulate is, are we serving?
Like, who's
who
this?
Are we defending ourselves against? Is it a mob that we're create? Like, yeah, there's people on Twitter that will go fucking ape shit about something, but that's not your fucking life.
No,
if you don't react,
I think a lot of it with a lot of people in LA has to do with the feeling that your real life is also exists sort of within the internet. And so there's sort of like it feels like it's merged a little bit. Does that make sense? Where people have this fear in them.
I'm sure LA is so completely different to my day-to-day
where
life.
You have Bisbee? Maybe
like, okay, what the gender pronoun thing.
Oh, man,
how
we're getting
often
into
does
everything.
That ever come up?
Yeah.
Like, I think people are battling just the same way you yell about sports. Like, how often do you have to worry about saying the right pronoun in day-to-day life?
Pretty often.
Really?
Well, yeah, because I work with some trans people and stuff, so I try to be pretty...
Oh, and I have trans neighbors, but I don't...
They don't care.
You know, I don't ever say they or them or she or he. I say, hey, you... Your pipe just burst because it went under freezing and it's leaking, and I'm going to call a plumber because you're out of town.
Yeah, you say the C word and the R word, and then fuck you, your pipe's under my house.
Well, I'm not doing my act to my neighbors. I treat them with respect, and when they fucking got their moped stolen. I go, hey, we got security cameras. We'll find the fucking guy that did it. I think is like when you live in a small town, you understand how much every argument boils down to overpopulation. If everyone lived in a town of 5,000 people, you'd be cool. There's no homeless guy. There's Brokey, we call him.
Right. But even that, that suggests familiarity in a relationship that you even have, like, you know, you guys have nicknames for each other.
Yeah. It's supply and demand. When there's too many fucking people,
right,
you care less about people.
I think the tide's starting to shift a little bit the other way now, is that people are so sort of fed up with the oversensitivity and all that kind of stuff to where...
Yeah, but that's...
Yeah.
That's sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
But the problem is because people find it so hardcore, they're pushing idiots into being kind of racist, over
right,
the
right.
top. I'm going to say whatever I want. Now I'm going to say things that are not even funny and are offensive just to prove I can say anything, just like those people on my Facebook fan page that just, as a backlash, they're being unfunny in a way that is offensive.
Isn't that right. like the greater truth about these things, though, is that like in a society, especially a big one, we never find the nuanced middle. We always overcorrect in one direction or the other. Like, we needed to get more sensitive. We got too sensitive. Then we need to get more raw. We're going to get too raw. And we're just always going to be like fighting against the excess.
Well, until you finally figure out, just stop being involved. If you
just get out.
Well, yeah, just do your own thing.
When you were coming out,
like
when...
Legion of Skanks. Like, I know a lot of those guys. They say fucked up, but they kind of they have their own little thing.
They got their pirate ship.
Yeah. And they're enough under the radar that they're making fine livings and. I mean, I don't know all of their opinions and beliefs, but I went to Skankfest and I go, there's a good mix of people here. No one's an asshole. No one's like, it ain't some fucking MAGA fucking QAnon rally.
Right.
So, yeah, but they
well, you're with the real hardcore pussies today. Well,
when you were coming up, did you feel that kind of sensitivity and sort of the stand-up world, or were older comics sort of talking about political correctness, or is it really sort of heightened at its peak today?
No, when I was coming up, I never had a home. I started in Vegas,
yeah,
which only I think me and Sam Tripoli can say we started in Vegas, because open mics wouldn't touch like the strip, like
right.
the comedy clubs wouldn't touch open micers. There was no crossover. There's no room to grow. You had to either leave Las Vegas or continue to do open mics for the rest of your life. There was no growing process. So I never really had like a home. I moved to Phoenix and I was a house MC at a shitty comedy club, but they gave me a free hotel because it was in a hotel. And that's how I got on the road. And then I did triple gigs. There was never like any pressure.
Can you explain Tribble? I know what they are, but could you explain
what
Tribble is?
Okay, sorry, for the listener. Yeah, thank you. Tribble was a legendary one-nighter booker where you'd work these shitty-ass small towns, Winnemucca, Nevada, Walla Walla, Washington, all on, you know, in the Northwest.
It was like Montana, kind of.
Montana,
Utah,
Wyoming, Utah, yeah. and not Salt Lake.
Right.
Yeah, it was just Price, Utah, mining town. Like, just all these little shitty gigs, and you drive forever, like literally sometimes 7-8 hour drives between gigs every night. You're Idaho Falls, and then all the way to eastern Montana to Billings, and then all the way back to western Montana.
It was like the Iditarod for comics.
Yeah, but with the most fucked up routing. Like, okay, the Iditarod starts in Anchorage, and then you
go a little logic
towards Nome, but then you forgot your keys back outside of Anchorage and have to go get them, and then you go towards Nome, but you have to take a left because that's the place you can piss. It was like that.
Yeah.
So there was no pressure whatsoever. I was just repeating a bit that I did when I was a kid comic in Big Timber, Montana, that I'm not going to repeat. And I'm like, but I remember saying that. I was like 25 years old or 24 years old. And it was, yeah, it had a salty language that you have to use a vowel to say.
I don't know. I'm actually still confused, but
I'll tell you. The point is, there was no pressure whatsoever for any kind of language things.
Language policing. You could just let it rip.
No.
And in fact, they probably
also
wanted that.
I was at an age where I didn't have opinions. I was just talking about titty bars and jerking off, because that's what you know at 25 years old.
So where did your opinions come from?
When I got old and bitter and, you know, a couple of breakups, and then you read a smart fuck book just to impress a girl.
Those breakups really do add a lot of cynicism to my life's perspective.
I've talked to more comedians who started actually doing stand-up. I always wanted to, but it was once I got divorced or broke up, I'm gonna go talk shit about her on stage.
And once you realize love doesn't have the meaning you were kind of investing in it, you're like, I need to find something else that someone else can't take from me.
Or just you want to
just talk shit on someone.
There was no social media back then.
Right.
Yeah, I want to talk shit about someone to every stranger in the world. You had to get up an open mic.
Right.
You couldn't just go on Instagram. It's so easy now.
Yeah, right.
I do remember when I first started stand up, there that feeling of being up on stage and being able to say whatever you want to say was the most kind of intoxicating thing about it. Where I didn't even know how to structure a joke. But I was just like, wow, I can say anything.
And that's the problem. When you have the power to say whatever you want to say, sometimes those people want to say, I'm going to say the worst thing I could ever say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you have nothing to lose when you're open mic.
Yeah, Blaine Kapach called it like the machete, like all edge and no point. And I always thought that was a good way. That was a good way to say
that's
it.
Great.
Yeah.
That's
very good.
That stuck with me. What do you think you'd be doing if you weren't a comic?
In a beautiful world, I would be a defense attorney.
Whoa!
Oh, wow!
Because if you look at my body of work, most of it is, and sometimes defending the indefensible, and I make really good arguments. I mean, most of my the best of my shit is an argument. Why is this? If you look at it like this, why can't this be this? And like. And,
so like
and then
people
that
Larry
want to
Flint
be offended
kind
go,
of
yeah, I can't argue with that. And those are the bits that you love to come up with, like, oh, fuck. All right, I see the angle on this. And I do. I do write like a defense attorney preps his case.
Right.
I'm going up there with
you're
the
laying
case.
Out the argument. You're taking it beat by beat.
Yeah.
And you're trying to land at a place that can't be refuted.
Yeah, those are the best ones. I'm not saying all of my shit is that good. I've lost a lot of cases.
Hey, that's the job. You're not going to bat 1,000. Yeah.
When I always see like your nationalism bit circulates the web.
Oh my god! And that's what it took 18. No. Wait. Yeah, that's 2007. There's another one. About freedom, you're born free, teach a man to fish. That's 2004. And then it wasn't until fucking Trump and all that, like people started, I think this is on point now. Like, those are all fucking decades old.
Yeah, I was always wondering whenever I'd see those like circulating around, when you know, like I was actually making the rounds like a week ago, I think. How does that, do you enjoy that, or do you kind of like, oh, they're taking it the wrong way, or do you sort of like,
no, I always enjoy it.
Okay,
enjoy
right.
The only time is when they paraphrase it in a GIF or whatever, or not a GIF, or just a fucking meme, I guess is the right
word. Right.
And they paraphrase it wrong without credit. Then I, like, fuck you, that's not how I said it. And it goes on longer than that. We just did the Adam Carolla, and this special that is an old special, basically, that we released in May 2020, but now it's out for free on All Things Comedy and on YouTube. So they're promoting that, and he opened the show by playing the trailer that we put out, which is just basically the segue. Because I remember when we put it out in 2020, we put out that trailer. I'm like, that's so like Carlin bullshit. I'm like, no, that's the setup to the bit. Why don't you play the funny part of the, because it's like 8 minutes long. That's my problem in this new world is Hedberg would flourish.
Right.
In this
his
new
reels
world.
On Instagram would be insane. Just 30-second nuggets.
Yeah,
of just
all his fucking shit.
Whimsical, again, beautiful that observations.
Bit about the word retarded, which has a million different arms to it, is 22 minutes. No one's going to sit through that in a tweet.
Did you know Hedberg well?
In the early days, and once we both started headlining, we didn't see each other much. And then he was a junkie, and junkies don't get out as much as barflies.
Right. They're more introverted.
Write that down.
More introverted by nature. they need to recharge at home alone.
Our friend's doing a documentary about Hedberg that I have to do an interview for tonight at 7.
Oh, cool.
I have like 4 stories that I've told. Like, there's been like, oh, it's the anniversary of Hedberg's death, so we're doing this for SiriusXM, and Shawcroft is his wife, and she's doing a thing, and I'm like, and over the years, he's died in 2005. It's nearly 20 years ago, and I'm like, I don't have that much. I've said everything I have to say, so I just told him to write that down.
Right.
That was like, I don't know what to say in this interview that I haven't said in a...
So when you were starting off with like guys like Hedberg and you, and I think you guys are kind of the same generation as like Attell and Marin and Louie and all those guys.
No, they were just ahead of us.
Oh, okay.
I don't really.
Did you? But what I was trying to go.
Have you guys ever tripped together?
Yeah, we've done mushrooms together. Yeah. Oh, wow. You want to do some mushies now?
No, because Hedberg and I, when we first met, we were working the Mall of America in Minneapolis, Knuckleheads Comedy Club, and I was a middle act, and he was the opener, and Lewis Johnson from Denver was a headliner, and he had seen Hedberg, and he's like, you gotta watch this kid, man. This kid's funny. But he was a shit MC.
Oh, I could see that.
Yeah, he died most nights. Because he wasn't asking about, hey, who's here? Who's got a birthday?
And he kind of looked down at the ground, and he was kind of in his own world.
To start a show in a comedy club where no one's a draw. Like, even now, most, like, the improvs, they're booking, like, night by night. Someone that people know.
It's not
like comedy night anymore, where people just go, I love comedy. Let's go see random comedy. Back then, yeah. And so for a Hedberg to go up, with no name recognition and no panache as an MC. Hey, fill out your comment cards. There's none of that. Sometimes I like to throw... People say, Mitch, you don't have a lot of friends. I say, it's kind of sad. I say, yeah, sometimes, like when I throw a frisbee. You can't open with that after da 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 bum. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's Tuesday night. Yeah. Ready for some comedy? You can do better than that. Yeah. Whoa! Tip your waitresses and keep your table talk to a minimum. Here's Mitch Hedberg. Yeah, I don't have a lot of friends. It just was.
How was the mushroom trip, though?
But then we did acid together at a Hampton Inn with his gal at the time, Jana Johnson. Who, if you know, one of my favorite bits of his, because...
Oh, the girlfriend
I knew the
one?
Girl, yeah. I don't have a girlfriend, but I do have a girl that would be very upset if she heard me say that. And knowing Mitch, we'll talk about this in the... When you found out that so many of those Stephen Wright one-liners, and I think that's probably why... He hated Stephen Wright comparisons the same way I hate Bill Hicks comparisons.
Interesting.
Because a lot of his jokes were true stories whittled down to a one-liner.
Yeah, condensed through his like point of view and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, the ducks eat free at Subway is because that actually happened to him, and he made it into a Stephen Wright-like joke where Stephen Wright made jokes. Mm. And that's why I hate Bill Hicks comparisons, because... I put all of my fucking humanity, my daily life, every awful thing. And you can watch Bill Hicks's entire library and not know anything
what
about...
What he did like a week ago or anything
like that. Do you
have
a wife? Do you have a girlfriend? Did you...
He was like pure cultural critic, and yours is more biographical.
Yeah. So I don't hate the comparison, nor did he hate, because they were... It's always someone giving you credit. No one's saying, you suck as bad as Bill Hicks. No, it's always a polite thing.
Did you guys hang out, you and Bill Hicks?
No, he was, yeah, he died. He passed in before 94 when I was basically getting my sea legs in comedy. I started in 90, so.
Okay.
And yeah, he was. We didn't cross over in fucking La Crosse, Wisconsin, or fucking Big Timber, Montana.
And then you lived in L.A. for a period of time before.
10 years.
10 years?
And you hated it, right?
Well, when I got here, it was like, I went right from living to my car, out of my car for 3 years to, oh, you got a development deal and an agent and a manager, so... For a minute, you're like, oh, bells and whistles and shiny objects. And
yeah,
am I going to be famous? And then, but I've always hated traffic. And
you like that bar up on Sunset, though, right?
I think Coaching was... Horses. Yeah. That's Mitch and I found that. Because he lived on Sierra Bonita and I lived on Curzon. We walked here from the Snake Pit. So we were north of that walking distance right. to the Snake Pit. But we went to... the Coaching Horses, we would walk past, and it was such a scary dive bar that was open during the day. The door was open, but you never saw people coming in and out. And that was right by where we both lived. And I'd go, you want to go in there? Like, man, I don't know. And one day we went in, and then it was just the most beautiful day drinking experience. So we would go there all the time when we first both lived here.
Nice. Do you get a lot of your inspiration from, like, the kind of people there and from just, like, the environment? Or are you just going there to, like, to get after
Oh, no, this was, again, this was, like, 1996.
Hmm.
So, no, we just, like, I remember Quentin Tarantino came in one time. Like, a lot of people would go in there because nobody was in there because it was scary. And we were sitting there just, like, you two, we're your age. And Tarantino sits down two stools away, and there's only five people in the bar. And we're like, we were about to leave. I'm like, you want to buy Tarantino a shot of Jägermeister?
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, let's do it. Hey, can we buy you a shot? We just did a shot with Tarantino, and it was cool as fuck.
That is cool. It's cool he did it.
And I have to remember that. I don't... drink all the shots that are sent my way, but I try to remember, because you don't want to be douchey, like how much it means to you. I remember I won the San Francisco comedy competition in 1995, and my managers were co-owners of the Improv, Mark Lano and Joanne Astro, and I came back and they had on the marquee, congratulations Doug Stanhope, SF comp winner, on the marquee, which to me at that point, I was at that point 5 years into comedy and I was all overjoyed. And I had my camera back then, was not on a phone. I actually had a camera and I took a picture of it. But then Jerry Seinfeld came in, who was the biggest fucking comedian in the world at that point. And he came in on an empty night at the Improv, and then he went outside to make a mobile cell phone call probably. But he was sitting alone underneath my sign, and I go, I could go get a sign of my name on a marquee with Jerry Seinfeld on a fucking funk, and I didn't have the balls to do it. And I wish I had. To this day, I'm like, I wish I had been that guy to get that picture. So when people say, I don't want to be that guy, I'm like, yeah, be that guy.
It gives you more memories.
Yeah, just don't go past it. Oh, Jerry, hey, if you want to go, I have vodka in my apartment. If you want, thanks for letting me take the picture. But hey, can I go?
Right, it's
you
want to
go to
the
Jumbles Clown Room or whatever? No, just stop yourself. Be that guy and then stop.
Make it a small imposition. Do you watch much like, I was really curious, did you watch like Don't Look Up?
Yes, and I don't remember anything. I read a book. I remember if I like it. I watch a Netflix series. I remember.
It's just a sentiment. You just.
But kinda... Don't Look Up is that one with all the people and the thing. See, now I sound like Michael Biehn. Yeah, Don't Look Up. I enjoyed that. That was it was a satire of whatever's going on in the world or something. I watched it before I left.
That's a good review.
Yeah, I liked it.
Do you? I was because I've been kind of thinking.
It's kind of like The Platform. which I actually watched twice, so I remember it. I'm kind of the same way with names. I never listen the first time someone tells me their name. One of you is JT, one of you is Chad. And I would go with you're a Chad.
Yeah.
Just by looks. But the second time. But the platform I recommended to everyone, did you see that?
No.
Movie? Oh my God, it's so good. And only one person that I respect hated it. And Don't Look Up, I go, my friend Valentina, I go, you're so gonna love this. And she was the only one that didn't like it. Yeah, I get halfway through. It was too kind of on the nose. Anyway.
Right. Do you think, like, with the nature of the way the world's changing, that, like, kind of fiction and stuff is... I've been thinking lately, like, maybe fiction is, like film and television is almost, like, out of touch now with the way we... perceive things and look at things.
I watch so little fiction, and too much of what is supposed to be reality is fiction now.
But it's constructed reality, right?
Yeah. Well, but I don't even know if everyone knows this, but at some point, what was trending on Twitter was what was actually trending, what people were clicking on, and at some point they changed that, and now you see trending. And other things that they're just forcing into what's up now. They changed that. If you pull up Twitter, like, I know I said that to Chrissy Mayer, who is, like, so fucking, I guess, hardcore right wing. I don't get involved. But she did not know that. Like, yeah, it's not necessarily trending. And there, I noticed it because they'll have stories. San Francisco Chronicle says, which is essentially clickbait headline, and then it's a subscription service. You have to subscribe to click on what they have in the trending. Like, if you have to pay for it, it's not fucking trending on Twitter. No one's like.
Are you saying, like, the articles or stories that, or the kind of things that they kind of want you to look at, they're sort of inserting
that,
in there
that would invite a fight?
Right.
So and so said. Beyonce is divorcing so-and-so, or
yeah,
some politician is, you know, because there's certain ones that say trending, and then there's also ones that are promoted. But they're where it used to say trending now, like, that's not, people don't give a fuck about this. You're making people give a fuck about this.
Do you think that the media and, like, tech companies are sort of consciously trying to stoke a culture war?
Well, it's good business for news to be. What's your favorite reality show where everyone gets along?
Right.
You need conflict, and news is a business. So, yeah, they're going to make you fight, and they're going to pick sides and divide us. Does anyone really want just a good game? No.
No, you want there to be, like, some raw or more provocative.
Yeah, no one watches elements. Sports for the fucking... athletics, they
no, want it's winners. Like fighting. Yeah. When I watch a fight, I want the two fighters to be.
Yeah, you don't
want
to draw
on a pissed off matchup. Like, I want them to be angry at each other before the fight, and yeah. That always sells better when they're being too respectful. You respect them for it, but you don't want to watch as bad.
Yeah, that's why I fucking hate Conor McGregor as much as I hate
Twitter.
Any kind of, you know, whatever bullshit right wing left wing debate. Like, when, because it does sell tickets, and I try not to get involved in that. I could be such a great troll. I would be a better troll than a comedian. I could start so much shit, and I could pick a side. If I picked a side, I could be bigger than any fucking comic that is, because I know how to sell bullshit. I started selling bullshit before I was a comedian. And it just seems so cheap and fucking rigged. Yeah. I'm going to be outspoken. I was asking Adam earlier, like, can you spot the difference? Whatever kind of cancel culture, Me Too, can you innately see the ones that are just making this up to get a spotlight on them? Because
right.
They're so... opaque and apparent to me, where you don't care about who grabbed your ass at a fucking thing or an audition or said the wrong word. You're just doing this Why would anyone lie about this? Move to Hollywood and get in the business and see what people will do to get any notice in the industry. Yes, yes, they would lie about that. Yes, they would fake this.
Yeah, well, it seems like in society, like in the culture today, there's sort of victimhood is like equated with stat. Like if you're a victim, then you have some sort of status.
Yeah, and then you have to be more of a victim to right. get more status. And
yeah,
it's tough. It's true. Like, do you watch The Bachelor at all? Bachelorette.
I've been forced to by a friend occasionally. Like two friends.
It's amazing.
Morgan
right?
Murphy. No, I hate it. Like, I'm gonna have to piss. I just saw Hannigan to leave to piss.
You gotta go now?
No, I'm gonna have to wait for him to get back. I'm gonna have him fill my seat, and you can pick his brain for about 90 seconds okay. about what it's like to Let's manage a guy like me. Yeah, Hannigan and I have a business relationship that should be the standard in that for 20 years now plus, 20 years almost exactly, he works for me. I don't have an agent. He's my manager agent, and he gets a percentage. And if I don't work, he doesn't work.
20 years, that's a good long relationship, especially for that kind of arrangement.
And when you look at agent-manager situations here where I don't know what you've done or you've been.
We got reps and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, how many times do they have 1,000 fucking clients and one of you does something good and they take credit for it? Where they're just signing every fucking random person who's doing their own legwork and then throws fucking spaghetti against the wall and goes, hey, I represent that person. Yeah, how many people who aren't working do you represent? And they're all, Hennigan, you're stepping in. I set you up. I have to piss. So I just described our business relationship.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Brian, do you want to come over here and take a seat for a second?
If I don't work, you don't work.
Yeah. Part of all of the advice Doug gives you is billable. Okay, what do you want to ask?
Is Doug your... do you have other clients, or is Doug your...
I just explained that, Brian. Oh, they weren't listening.
You weren't listening. No, I only work with Doug.
Oh, nice. How'd you guys meet?
I brought Doug over to the 2002 Edinburgh Festival. I myself was a comedian. I got to like sort of being like a middle level comedian in the UK, but then I started running venues and shit, and I had a semi competent business background, so it was very easy for me.
Mm.
And then I got some sponsorship money from a Scottish beer company called Tennent's. And I approached a comedian that I know called David Crowe out of Seattle.
Mm.
And I said, I want to bring you over to the UK. And I got off the phone call with David Crowe. And then I went, oh, I need more than David Crowe. So I called him back. And I said, is there anyone else? Who else do you think could do well at the Edinburgh Festival? And he said, have you heard of a guy called Doug Stanhope? And I went, nope. And he said, you should get him. And this is one of the great things about comedy, because I learned this very quickly, indeed, on that call. Never look to anybody other than a comedian for advice about who's a good comedian.
Hmm.
So, because if a comedian tells you somebody else is a good comedian, they're always right. Agents, producers, whatever, they've got a vested interest.
Right.
David Crowe told me, like, just get Doug Stanhope. And I, without even looking at anything Doug had ever done, I sent him an email saying, would you like to come to the Edinburgh Festival? And he gave me a one-word email response, which was, sure. And that was it.
And that was the start of a nice relationship.
Yeah. So there we go. I'll step out now.
Yeah, we could hear you peeing. I think you you had a nice, strong stream.
Strong prostate.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice working, right.
No one ever brings that up on podcasts. No, hey, I heard you have a brilliant prostate.
Yeah, you were... That was a fucking nice, strong...
Yeah, it was like dumping out a pot of coffee all at once. There's nice. No deal forcing it. It's just slosh.
You know, I remember, speaking of, like, physical attributes, there was like an old comedy thread where comedians would like talk to each other. I don't even know on what platform, but it was like pre like web 2.0 or whatever you call it. But you and Louis were having like kind of like a humorous debate about how to take care of yourself on the road.
On the old ACS?
I think that might have been what it was.
Yeah.
But Louis was basically talking about how you got to work out and like run and he had this whole...
He was worried. He's always been, I worry about you. And I, when I say always, I think I've talked to him maybe 8 times in my career. But he's like, I worry about you. And then we did that episode. But
yeah, Eddie,
on. When you said physical attributes, someone on Twitter was promoting, yeah, and evidently he has a huge dick, which is completely the opposite.
Yeah, we got small cocks too.
Yeah, but I just thought that would be such a great way to fuck with a comedian, like, to spread a rumor, like, a comic. I don't know Chris D'Elia, but I've heard a lot of people making jokes at his expense. Like, just have all your fan base just go, just occasionally on social media go, yeah, he evidently has the biggest cock since Milton Berle. So, like, every chick, every 13-year-old chick he dates or whatever is... But this goes back to the meme thing where, like, people would put out memes about... That said, attribute it to me... about left-wing, right-wing shit that I never said and put my name on it. And I go, I've never fucking said anything close to that. I've never... But then I thought, oh, that's a great way to fuck with people. Just put out a meme that is so, like, you know, Nazi-ish or, and then attribute it to someone.
Right.
But yeah, to claim someone who's a womanizer has a huge cock and just go, oh, or talk about it in podcasts. Oh, yeah. You know the legend of Dane Cook's cock?
Does he have a big piece?
He's not a womanizer, but just so like if you had a Milton Berle legendary giant cock and then every woman expected it, and you're like, I didn't put any of that out there. It's not true.
Yeah, you got to lower expectations.
Yeah, a girl comes back to your hotel room. Yeah, I saw all this stuff on the internet. Like, it wasn't me. It's not...
Right.
I feel like you got to do that for, like, the more esoteric. Like, you got to say Emo Phillips has a giant cock.
Emo Phillips probably is not slinging a lot of cock on the road right now, but... Like you. Maybe I'd do it to you.
Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah, please, by all means, go.
Yeah, I did that going deep, and wow, fucking JT could go deep with that giant fucking cock he showed us after the show. And you're like, I can't believe Doug Stanhope. I don't know why he said that.
I look like I respect Doug's opinion. And
you guys need pussy. That's the only reason you're in this business is you're young, and pussy is your fucking, that's your
You know, it wasn't that for me at the start. At the start, I just wanted to be like a good artist and explain myself in a way that was compelling.
The first time you do karaoke, you want to nail Little Red Corvette and hit the fucking high pitch, and then you want pussy when you sing it the second time.
I have had sets where, like, if there's pretty girls in the audience, I'm like, oh, I hope they're liking this. And I feel like I worry about that. I stress about it. Like, I don't want that to get into my head too much as to a motivating, as my motivation for I'm saying.
Well, that's fucking human nature. Eventually, it's Mike Tyson.
What do you mean? Where he was like banging two at a time before the Buster
fight? No. I did 2 nights at the Comedy Store, Tuesday and Wednesday, and before the show, I don't give a fuck about hot chicks anymore. But now I'm performing in front of my peers. Every time I come back to L.A., it's the only time I see all these comedians that are my peers, and I want to fucking kill. And right before I go on stage, Richie, the GM, comes in. Hey, I just came from a thing with Kenan Thompson and Mike Tyson. They're coming to the show, so they're going to be in there. And I'm like, why would you tell me that before the show?
Yeah,
like, Mike Tyson is going to be at my show? And then it's in my fucking head. And I'm like, what if he's sitting in the front? Because I can't see the room till you walk out there. And like, do I have anything I would say to Mike Tyson? And I'm already trying to remember my act that I'm just 2 weeks back from filming a fucking movie, and
you're trying to be, and then you start thinking, what would Mike Tyson think is funny? How can I make Mike Tyson laugh?
Yeah, what would I interact with him? Should I ignore him? Just, and then he never fucking showed up. After I go, was Tyson even here? He goes, no, he said he got too high, he couldn't make it. And then the next day, I was all feeling like I got stood up by Mike Tyson.
Now you're mad at Mike Tyson. Like,
yeah, Mike Tyson, who I don't know, and I was all excited, and now it's Mike Tyson's fault. But so, yeah, you do the same thing with hot chicks.
Right.
So I'm saying I'm still in the same place where I can get frazzled over...
Right, there's always some audience member that you might be thinking about too much or catering to too much, but that's just the process of doing
it. And it doesn't end is what I'm saying. I'm giving you no sense of hope. It never goes
that.
Away.
I don't want hope.
It just goes in different angles.
I want the cold truth.
My dad is here tonight, or a kid I hated in high school 30 years later is here tonight, and whoever.
So, mm-hmm. Do you get nervous before going on stage?
No, I'm a drunk. I don't feel anything.
Yeah.
But, I mean, things can fuck with your head.
Right.
I get nervous in the UK far more than I do here because I'm always worried about, does this translate?
Yeah, their cultural reference points the same as mine.
Yeah, and they're so much smarter than us.
Are they?
The fucking hecklers over there are funnier than most comics on any given night at the comedy store.
They know how to talk
and
shit.
You don't necessarily understand what they say. So they go, "What are you gonna fuck on a beat about?" And the crowd laughs.
Goes crazy.
And you go, "All right, I hope that was in my defense, or was that at my expense? I don't know." Mm-hmm. And then you plow through.
When did you start wearing the outfit on stage?
Well, this, not this. I got a closet full. I'm a fucking filthy hoarder now. But our friend, a neighbor, bought me. Because she had seen me occasionally I'd wear weird shit throughout my career. Back in the Hedberg days, when I would wear a Santa hat when we were both middle acts. For like a whole year, I would wear a Santa hat on stage for no reason. So occasionally, but once my neighbor bought me a fucking great coat. It's the one I wore in, the one in Portland. Beer Hall Putsch. And she gave it to me, and then randomly in a thrift store, because we always go to thrift stores my whole life, I found a pair of yellow polyester pants, and I went, "Oh, fuck, this matches that jacket." And then I figured out, white shoes would go with this. And once I could figure out a full suit, then we just hit vintage shops and thrift stores religiously. So now I have a whole closet full of... And I spend more time, honestly... putting together what suits I'm gonna wear on this tour. Okay, well, I gotta get the right socks to go with it, and I got the socks that those are orange and brown, and that goes with. And I should put this much time into my act.
Do you write? Do you write in like pen to paper?
Yeah, yellow bits? Legal pad.
You do?
Old school. And you know what? In the day in the 90s. When I got here, that was the rift between alt and road comics happened with David Cross and what's her name, the Janine Garofalo and all of them, and they hated all the improv road hackneys, and like me and Hedberg were
could do both.
That's another thing. Note for Hedberg, where we did not take sides.
Yeah,
like we were not in either camp. We fucking drank alone. I say that on stage now. The only people I don't want in my show are left or right wing people. Just, yeah, keep your fucking opinions at home. but yeah, we were like that in that day. And what was the question again?
Do you put pen to paper?
Oh, pen to paper.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember what the segue was, but I know the next podcast is going to be a disaster because now I'm starting to get pretty drunk.
That's great.
Pen to paper, yes. Oh, that was back then. Alt comics would go up with and read notes. Mm-hmm. Like Doug Benson would read notes, and Sarah Silverman would read notes, and then the road comic faction would go, "You're not even professional if you go up with notes."
Mm-hmm.
And again, I didn't have an opinion. But now I have an opinion where I see comics go up with their phones.
Right.
And because it looks like you're texting or tweeting. Like if you're looking at notes, people know you're not like bored with them and seeing what time Applebee's is open until. Because when you're on your phone, you could be doing anything. So yeah, if you're going to use notes on stage, write them on a fucking yellow legal pad. Don't put them on your phone.
Right.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I think.
That's if you want to include a old fucking angry bitter men that used to, we used to put them on notes.
You're on the soapbox. Yeah, you're telling us how it is.
God, fucking Saturday Night Live is
pretty bad, right?
It's well, no, it's always been bad, but Trump's biggest war crime was making it relevant again because all that industry, like ABC, well, what are comedians saying? Well, let's go to network comedy, which is irrelevant to all comics. You don't go, oh, I got to stay up for Kimmel tonight. Nothing against Kimmel, but yeah, that's where CNN would go, oh, let us get our finger on the pulse of what comedy is saying about, well, that's not the pulse, is late night with fucking whoever's on, Seth Meyers. Do you ever watch Seth Meyers? How often do you?
No.
Or whatever.
No, it's hard to watch any comedy. I mean, that's what I was kind of talking about with the fiction thing, is I just kind of only watch like dating shows or real life stories or yeah, like read nonfiction.
It
feels like all the distilled versions of what we're going through feel a little
impractical. Jokers, I fucking love since day one.
Right.
That's the only comedy I watch, and I watch religiously. It's the best hangover cure for a Sunday marathon session of Impractical Jokers after Impractical Jokers. That's pretty much the only funny thing I ever watch.
I hear you. It's tough. Should we answer some questions?
Oh, yeah, that's, we're going to do that thing.
Yeah.
Hennigan keeps looking at me like maybe it's...
Well, I'm not.
Well, I don't know what...
Yeah, feeling.
No, I'm great.
You want to keep rocking?
I don't know if it's time to go, but I looked at my watch. All right. No.
What's up, guys? I'm interrupting this podcast to let you know once again that we have a new Patreon out. If you want to listen to bonus episodes each week, me and JT solo episodes, go to patreon.com/ChadGoesDeep to become a patron. We also have tour dates. We're going to be in your city. To check out our tour dates, go to chadandjt.com for all ticket links. We're also brought to you by Summer in Argyle, this new Audible original created and written by Nate Odenkirk and his father, Emmy Award winner Bob Odenkirk. Pop in your earbuds and visit the town of Argyle, Ohio. It's a place that celebrates the spirit of close enough and enjoys both an annual hot dog eating contest and an annual murder. Ooh. Hear about Argyle's darkest secret, the mysterious death of a magnificent bowler who never bowled and instead warmed the bench the way Argyle folk love. You guys, this is an excellent murder comedy. I suggest hopping on ASAP. It's one hot dog murder comedy with everything on it. Visit audible.com/summerinargyle and listen now. #summerinargyle. We're also brought to you by the legends at Manscaped. Manscaped, thank you so much for keeping our trims pubed, for looking after our hogs, for making sure their dinks are looking fresh and clean, because Manscaped has a new shower routine. They have the ultra premium body wash with aloe vera and sea salt, keeping you looking and smelling fresh. It's hair care time. You got the shampoo and conditioner. It has coconut water, green tea, aloe, turmeric, and sage. And they also have the Manscaped aluminum-free deodorant. Very safe for your body and keeps you feeling fresh. And finally, they have the hydrating body moisturizer spray that's infused with the power of red algae from the Pacific Ocean. Guys, hop on the Manscaped train today. Get those trims looking pubed as F. And keep that dong looking fresh. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code GoDeep at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code GoDeep at manscaped.com. It's time to get wet and clean with your new Manscaped shower routine.
All right, Chad and JT, what up? Writing to you guys because of a brutal situation that has befallen me. My lady and the New York Yankees. Been living in the city since graduating college a few years ago and met a totally legit girlfriend. We've been dating for a few months now, but it has recently come to my attention that she has been spending a night or two every week hanging out with Giancarlo Stanton and his entourage. Giancarlo Stanton's this big beast baseball player for the Yanks.
Unfortunate, I know that.
The ball jumps off his bat faster than anyone. There are even pictures of my girlfriend and Giancarlo together at Le Bain with large bottles of Don Julio 1942. Need your advice here because I think my girlfriend could have been the one. Want to keep the relationship going, but I'm also a massive Yankees fan. I don't want to get in the way of Giancarlo and his massive hog in case my girlfriend is raising a stoke and propensity to hit dinger this season.
Aww.
Desperately awaiting your advice, Sean.
Here, this is where we, if I hadn't opened my mouth, this is where we talk about Jean Carlos having the biggest cock. It's over 18 inches.
Oh, man.
And then if, then when.
It's too big.
No, but then I'm saying my earlier idea for a prank, then we could have just now done this about Jean Carlo.
Yeah.
And just, so then his girlfriend's really upset when he doesn't really have that big of a dong.
Right.
All right.
It's a way to subtly undermine. No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, just, yeah. Well, just keep fucking her. Like, so what? Like, if she's fucking that other guy, what do you want out of the relationship? What do you think?
I would be threatened. I would be threatened if my girlfriend was hanging out a couple days a week with someone like Giancarlo Stanton. And I think it could, this guy doesn't seem to be as insecure about it as I would be.
Did he say why she's hanging out with him?
I
read that kind of fast, and I'm thinking kind of slow.
I think they've been dating for a few months, and she's been spending a night or two every week hanging out with Giancarlo Stanton and his entourage. There's even pictures of them hanging out.
Yeah,
at clubs.
There's a lot of why. You should take this as a phone call because there's a lot of why. Yeah, every now and then the Yankees player says, "Are you free a few nights this week with me and my friends?"
Sometimes, you know, people just want to have fun and going to things like that are exciting. So I'm not necessarily thinking that there is a sexual component, but I do think by and large, people in those situations in Giancarlo Stanton's position want to be hanging out with people with the possibility of
potentially sleeping with them. What's the
kid's name?
Sean, sit down and do an edible or just a mushroom stem and consider, how hot is my girlfriend really? She might just be fucking carrying baggage. Does she have a hotter friend that Giancarlo might want to fuck? Is she hot enough that a Yankees star is banging her on a regular basis? Because in my prime, as an athlete, I would be fucking different. I would never be fucking the same girl a few times a week. I would fuck her once and leave. So if she's spending a few nights a week for over a course of time, probably is he's fucking her friend or she does something else. He's probably not fucking her repeatedly.
So you're...
I think, too, I would take a page out of your book and just talk about how big his cock is to his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
That's... You know? Yeah, say, I heard on a podcast...
Like, this guy's cock is, I heard his cock is 20 inches.
I heard, well, he's probably very young. So say, I heard he actually killed two women with the size of his penis and had to pay out of court settlements because his penis is so huge.
Yeah, I think I would just keep talking about how big his cock is and then you're good.
I heard he suffers from premature ejaculation because the women is with her so hot. And then... If he's banging her for a while, she's like, oh, I guess I must not be that hot because he didn't premature ejaculate me. So I must not be that hot. And then now she suffers the shame of not being able to make the Yankees player that she's cheating on you with come quick enough. And then she'll kill herself. Next email.
Well, do you guys think
my responses make sense in my head? But I think I get a lot of confused looks.
No,
I'm gonna hit a vape pen for the first time ever.
You want to do it?
No, I have one here.
Oh, you do? Nice.
I tried it early this morning because I always smoke in podcasts, but I know I can't. And I took too big of a hit, I guess, and then I coughed like the first time I ever smoked pot. So I'm gonna
go,
hit
baby.
It gently.
What do you think about it?
That works.
Does it hit
nice? It's nice, right?
Well, I didn't cough, so yeah, I'll play with it.
Cheers.
That's only the second time I've ever hit a vape pen.
I would tell this dude, too, I think you're handling it really well. He seems to be pretty cool and open-minded.
Wait, this is why it should be a phone call. Has he got to meet the Yankees guy? Does he get free tickets? What's the fucking... There's pros and cons, just like having a baby. Like, all right, she's fucking... that guy, but do you get to ride in his fucking chauffeured fucking limousine Tesla? What are you getting out of this? How are you milking the fucking Giancarlo's
Yeah, I guess I'm just perceiving it from like thinking he wants a monogamous relationship. But what are your opinions on like monogamy and polyamory and those things?
This kid obviously sounds like he's 23, and no, it's a terrible idea. But that's all you want. That's when you have your testosterone up and you looking at my girl and shit. And then eventually, like, look at my girl because I'm looking at other girls and she's going to bother me if no one's looking at her. Yeah, he obviously is in a situation where it's all that young jealousy boner.
So you had that when you were younger and then it slipped away as you just went through more life experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Once you become dead inside, we should sell that as a self-help book, Brian. Dead inside, how to be
the best way to live.
As free as me.
How long have you been married again?
16 years.
16?
Yeah, but we have an unconventional relationship.
How did you guys establish that?
We didn't. It just...
evolved?
Yeah, you don't ask each other questions.
What drew you guys to each other?
Alcoholism and mental illness.
Nice.
Hey, those are good things. Mine and hers.
And
You'll get close quick that way.
Yeah. And it's worked out perfectly. There's no one I'd rather be with for the rest of my life. And
nice. Yeah. Beautiful.
She's fantastic.
Yo, what up, council? I would like to stay anonymous. I'm a new resident of Salt Lake City, 5+ months, not Mormon, and love it out here. But I have some trouble making friends and meeting ladies. I'm trying to better myself, doing more dates, volunteering, and going to the climbing gym skiing. But none of these have flourished into meeting a solid squad. I quit the dating apps because of lack of luck, and then after a 2-month no-date spree, a second date tried to peg me without warning or permission for the first time hooking up. I'm not into that stuff. My roommates are cool, but I have serious relationships, which lead to a lot of nights of myself. I try to meet people while doing the hobbies above, but should I be more aggro and asking for numbers to hang out outside of that? Is that an anxiety I have to get over? Should I re-download Hinge at the risk of another weird experience? I'm excited to hear your advice, and P.S. fuck Puzio. He's 24 and he works full-time in remote tech.
The pegging stood out in that... that's never her idea.
You think he's
did he say unexpectedly?
Yeah, like she threw it at him.
Well, how do you get in that position?
No chick goes out to a bar going, I want to fuck a guy in the ass with a strap on that I can't feel. Like, pegging is something.
Do you think he has the wrong idea of what pegging is? Do you think she just tried to stick a finger in his ass?
Yeah, probably.
I have no idea, but...
I don't. I kind of believe him. I think that they went home and he was like, hey, what are you into? And she was like, I want to peg you. And he wasn't ready for that level of
adventure. Yeah, but what a chick would only want to do that if you wanted her to do that.
You think so? These girls are wild, man. Some of these girls just... out here trying to peg. Yeah,
but you get no pleasure as a woman out of pegging a guy. That's not something, like, it's something you wouldn't mind doing if you were, like, in a weird relationship. Like, Fat Mike from NoFX is into all that fucking weird shit. And, but it's not like a girl is hanging out, like, I'm looking for a guy to peg.
I know, but here the JT Chad acts is out. Like, you're basically saying that is what they do.
I'm not saying it hasn't happened. I haven't been propositioned that way, but I do think that there's people who are turned on by the idea of doing that to someone, and that maybe because he's struggling to meet people, maybe he went out with someone who's a bit more eccentric, because that was what was
all right. Well, he made it sound like she brought him home only to peg him.
That's what I think happened.
Yeah, but that doesn't make sense. That's something that a woman has her choice of. Like, that's not. Go ahead.
Maybe she just wanted him to leave.
Yes, right. That's a good point. That's a good point. That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you for asking us the most unanswerable question in the world. Is, hey, I'm new in a town. How do I meet ladies? Fucked if any of us know. If we knew, then we'd be selling books and we wouldn't give you the information for free. But I do remember Paul R. Brown was a comedian that I did open mics with in Las Vegas when I started. And I remember his joke where he said, tourists ask me a lot, hey, Paul, how do I get laid in this town? And I said, it's just like any other place. lower your standards. So there's your advice from Paul R. Brown.
I would also tell us, dude, like, I think you're just keep doing what you're doing. It sounds like you're having exciting experiences, and they might be few and far between at this point, but you'll get some momentum. Just keep going. Get all the apps. Ask everybody to hang out. Just be shameless in your, you know, desire to do these things, and it'll
play hard to get. Allow yourself to get pegged on the first date. Then the next time, it's your fantasy, which is fisting. I let you peg me. Now you gotta play ball.
Are you pretty sexually adventurous?
Not anymore. Right. But yeah, I've always been, yeah.
Have you ever been in a pegging situation?
Yeah.
How was it fun?
It's not as fun as it looks in the porn. A lot of stuff, it hurts in real life. It's better to just jerk off to it in pornography.
It makes sense.
If you were in his situation, second date, and she tried to peg you, would you have allowed her to?
No, I would not when I was a kid. You have to go through all the motions. It's like the 12 steps of AA.
Right. You first you have to accept that you're powerless. Weird shit
that you get into in porn and then try in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It makes sense to me, too, that this is in Utah, like in a place that's fairly religious and restrictive in what you're allowed to do or what's deemed socially acceptable, so that it feels like to me that would push people into doing more stuff like that as a kind of a way to break out of
the covers. In the dark of night.
Exactly.
This girl was wearing a dress that went all the way to her feet. Well, the
problem is finding a strap on to buy in that town. So she had to makeshift it and whittle the dildo out of scrimshaw and then fucking all the leather belt herself out of fucking her
dad's. She sounds hot. She's handy.
Yeah. She had to strip a cow of its fucking fur and tan it to make the leather strap for the strap on.
Totally. All right. Girlfriend's annoying friend. What's up, my dogs? Love the pod. I'm a longtime listener. Here's the deal. I recently get into a relationship and things have been going great. I wanted her to finally meet two of my best friends, and she wanted me to meet one of her best friends. So we set up a night at my place. Her friend turned out to be super annoying. Let me explain. Not only would she not stop talking, but she would only talk to my girlfriend. And whenever she stopped talking and my girlfriend finally had a chance to engage with my friends, her friend would immediately start feeding her with esoteric topics about people from their past who none of us know. Me and my friend were trying to get good conversations going, but the flow kept getting killed because she would just ignore whatever we were talking about and keep taking my girl away from the conversation. It was pretty awkward, embarrassing, and I feel kind of disrespected. This was an important night for me. I really like this girl, and my friends mean the world to me. Her friend didn't seem to care that this was my girl's chance to finally meet my friends. Now my friends went away feeling like they barely met her. My girl tried her best to talk to my friends, but I'm not exaggerating when I say that her friend would not shut up for the whole night. I want her to hang with my friends again soon, but I don't want her friend to be there. Is there any way to make that happen without being rude?
I got this one. What's his name?
Parik.
No, I'm talking about that guy again.
Aaron.
That's my answer.
Can you amplify?
You have to get Aaron to cherry pick your fucking emails and then redact all the unnecessary information and make sure it's relevant. You know, when Bill Burr reads emails, he doesn't know what it's going to be, but someone went through all the emails going, oh, this one would be good for the show. That was the most fucking run-on nonsense. Hey, a lady talks too much. How many different ways can I say it? I've added several choices of how you can say one thing and you're boring to fucking begin with. How do I get a girl to shut up? Leave. And that guy should be doing all this work. He's done still not said a word. Why is he not fucking reading through this shit?
We have someone who's supposed to be doing it. He's a great guy. But it's the friend, it's his girlfriend's friend.
Yeah, I know, but the point is, so fucking just don't go out with them.
Yeah, I think
they don't understand relationships. Why do you have to go out with them to begin with? Are you fucking in some kind of contract?
I do agree. He's being a little overly sensitive about the situation.
Yeah, if my wife had a fucking boring friend over, I would go somewhere else and she would understand. And she has signs when she's being, when my wife is in an awkward social situation with one of my fucking run-on boring friends, she says, I gotta go, I have diarrhea. And no one questions her because she's got mental illness and they believe she has diarrhea. And they think it's adorable that she had to just scream, I have diarrhea. They don't know it means you're fucking boring her to death.
And I don't know why. Why'd he have her friends come Cheers. To meet the guy friends? Why'd they all meet together?
Yeah, why at the same time?
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah, and he's asking, how do I get her to come out again without her friend? And that seems fairly easy to achieve. Like, you just say, hey, can you come over just you?
I would just bring her over to meet my friends instead of having this whole get
are they
together.
All fucking Mormons? Are all your correspondents Mormons?
They are a lot from Utah, yeah. Uh-huh.
But it seems like you have a similar fan base to mine where these are all dudes.
Oh yeah.
There's no chicks emailing.
All right, do we feel like we adequately addressed that one?
That guy had no, none of these people have any real problems. How do I meet people? Well, be more interesting.
That's true.
Yeah. I was just telling a story about when I tried to get in the Sky Bar, when that was the biggest thing in the 90s. Like, oh, you have to be on the list and you can't get in the Sky Bar. And it's right across from the Comedy Store. And I go, well, let's try. I was drunk and had some fucking courage and bravado. And I go, yeah, we just played at the Comedy Store. Open mic, probably. is your name on the list? No, but here, and I palmed him a 20 to see if that'd work, and he just looked down and he shook his head at me like I was pathetic, and I walked away with the whatever two friends I was with, and I'm like, well, I tried, and then I looked in my hand, and I had picked a 1. It wasn't a 20. I tried to palm him a dollar where he probably thought I was being a dick and insulting him, where I was thoroughly embarrassed. Are we doing, oh, you were done with the computer? Are we doing the thing?
We're doing the next part. Yeah.
Yeah.
That you were lightly prepped for.
Yeah, the phrase, I couldn't think, I had one of the things, but go ahead. This is the regular thing on your cast.
Yeah, this is how we do it. But I think you'll figure it out quickly.
I'm becoming a king of vaping. Right here on this podcast.
I think it looks good on you.
I took a drag the first time in the hotel to try it out like I would off an American Spirit, and I coughed my fucking lungs out. But now I got it.
Why is it you're vaping?
Nicotine.
Okay.
Do you get a stronger hit from that than cigarettes?
Well, I...
But do you, like... No.
Oh, no, I can't take... If I took a drag like I would off a cigarette, I already almost died in my hotel just making sure it worked. But yeah, it's fine.
All right, let's do it. Chad, who is your beef of the week?
My beef of the week is with the news. I don't know why I started watching the news, or just news shit, over the past few weeks, just because of the Ukraine, all that kind of stuff. It just puts me in the worst mood. And I'm like, it ruins my day. I don't even know why I started watching it. So then I just stopped a few days ago. And I feel much better.
Nice.
And I think I like the idea of not knowing what's going on.
Well, you should have been my show at the Comedy Store. I agree and explore that in depth.
Let's go. Right. My beef of the week is with the Einstein Brothers Bagel Shop at LAX.
Oh, don't get me started.
I went in there at 11:15 and I said, can I get the bagel sandwich with eggs and bacon? And they said, we're sorry, we're not serving breakfast.
Oh, fuck off.
I'm serious.
Are you guys fucking with me?
No, I'm dead serious. And and they said...
all right, go to Deadbeat Hero and Subway breakfast sandwich. I think that's another... Yeah, all right, go ahead.
And they said, we're not serving breakfast. And I was like, well, what could you possibly be serving? It's a bagel place.
This is a giant bit from 2004 that includes my mother's suicide, which
was that's prescient because
that was an incredible bit.
There's three mother suicide bits. There's one on Sicko, where I go, eventually she's going to kill herself, and then on 2004 about Subway breakfast sandwiches. It's just, I can see the. Never mind. I'm not. I'll let you look it up. A Subway breakfast sandwiches, 2004, Deadbeat Hero is the name of the album.
Okay.
And I'm still that upset about places that don't serve breakfast, because Subway, the only difference between all of their sandwiches and breakfast is the egg. This pre-made fucking fake egg.
We're on the same page.
Can I get bacon? Can I get lettuce?
Mm-hmm.
Why 11 o'clock is just the one egg? I know where it sits. I watch you make it every day. It's in that cabinet. It's not away.
Let's go.
This place is the side. And every other part of your fucking sandwiches, why? And never found an answer.
Who's your beef of the week, Doug?
My beef of the week was just now coming down here. I was fucking four-way stop signs where someone stops before you, but then they wave you through. Like, no, go ahead. Well, no, it's a law. A four-way stop is whoever stops first goes next. And you can't just decide to be some fucking Deputy Dan that's going to change the law. And maybe I can't see through your fucking windshield because the sun's shining off it. So you're doing this to me, and I don't know that because I'm looking at the glare off your windshield knowing I'm doing the right thing by going next. And you think you can just change the fucking rules by being a gentleman and waving me through. No, you fucking recognize when you stop and you go fucking past it. And this is very angry Seinfeld kind of material that I thought of as we were walking the three blocks from this fucking snake pit and everyone's stopping at four-way stops and not knowing. Well, there's a beef.
That's a good beef.
I can't put it in my act because they go, well, he lost
it. Doesn't match
it.
Up with the
it doesn't
the more difficult it subject
doesn't
matter.
Brand right.
No, you got to. It's all got to fit. Chad, who's your babe of the week?
My babe of the week is my sister, Bridget. She's a master of logistics. She's planning a trip for us. I don't like planning trips at all. And she's got the master itinerary. And she's on top of it. That's all I got, man.
That's great.
But she's like planning this trip. She's like, I got a hotel for you. I got tickets for you. I got the restaurant reservations all lined up for you. And I'm like, thank you so much.
Dude, you gotta give it up.
My babe of the week is the girl, Katie Arts,
Applebee's
from the art department. She was the art department of this movie I just filmed, and we've kept in touch since we stopped filming, and I just keep trying to impress her, and so I drop names and stuff, and so my babe of the week is Katie Arts from Chicago, because I keep either name-dropping people I see in L.A. to her or name-dropping her on podcasts that I do. Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, my ex-girlfriend played my ex-girlfriend in this movie, and we're both now people of a certain age. And when we met Katie Arts, she goes, back in the day, now I know you would have been all over that. I go, no, even back in the day, I would have known she's always out of my league. But now I'm old and I keep flirting with her. And so, that's my babe of the week.
What's the movie you just shot? Did you write it?
No, but it seems like they fucking knew me when they wrote it. It's called The Road Dog. So it's theroaddogmovie.com, but there's nothing really there yet.
About a comic on the road?
Yeah, it's basically this kind of the same character I played in Louie, like the washed up alcoholic chain smoking comic, but a different angle of it, like the old guy.
That episode of Louie was so impactful. Did you feel like when you were doing it, could you tell that it was going to resonate with people so much?
No, and that's the problem. There's so many people involved. Conversely, stand up, you know immediately if you suck.
Right, you get that instant feedback.
And you're the only person in charge. In a movie, I don't act, so I don't know if I acted well. If I did it once, great. Well, I have to do it four more times from different angles and over someone else's shoulder. And so you're saying the same jokes in a row. Not even jokes. This is more of a drama almost.
Mm-hmm.
And and then you don't know how it's lit or what kind of fucking cameras they're using. You don't know any of this shit. So it's going to, it'll be a year before I know if I suck.
Right.
Imagine if you had to do your first open mic and wait for a year for the audience.
See how people responded to it.
To respond.
That's hilarious.
So yeah, that's it. It's there's a whole bunch of, that's going to be the next podcast. Fitzsimmons is in it. And then my girlfriend, my ex-girlfriend, who plays my ex-girlfriend. At the last minute when I got there, a week before shooting, I go, so who's this long-lost love girlfriend who's playing that? And they go, well, our person fell out. Do you have any ideas? I go, well, I do have my long-lost girlfriend from 25 years ago that I treated like shit, like the cast's role. Is she an actress? Yeah, she is. And we got her. We got my long-lost girlfriend from 25 years ago to be my long-lost girlfriend from 25 years ago. And then we got fucking Fitzsimmons to play my old comedy buddy that's working with me on the road after 17 years to work with me on the road after 17 years. Exactly. Like, just like the script is written.
Crazy.
There's so many coincidences in this movie.
Was it cathartic working with your ex on the...
Yes, yes.
That must have been great.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
His ex is kind of a well-known, or was, like, your grandparents would know. Like,
she was on the show Head of the Class that was on around the time as Screech. What was that one?
Saved
by the Bell. They kind of like ripped each other off. She was on the one with Robin Givens and
Billy Connolly.
Yeah, Billy Connolly and Howard Hessman.
Connolly, the Scottish comedian?
Yeah.
He's great.
Howard Hessman from WKRP started Cincinnati. That. And then Billy Connolly took over in later seasons. And yeah, so she was an actress. And
she's got the skill set.
Yeah, and I hadn't really seen her much in 25 years, just like the script goes. The problem is, the script also is, I'm dying of liver failure. I'm like, there's so many coincidences. Is this like some kind of fucking trip that I'm on? And
were you in that Mitch Hedberg movie, Los Enchiladas?
Cut out of that, too.
That's such a legendary thing in comedy nerd circles. Like,
well, I won't say it in his documentary, but it did stink.
Because, you know, when you're a comedy fan, you're like dying to see. You're like, whoa, Mitch Hedberg made a movie and like Attell.
Yeah, I showed up when they were fucking shooting, and I'm like, well, you didn't put me in it, huh? And then we tried to riff of just a one scene in an elevator, and then it got cut out.
Nice. Chad, who's your legend of the week?
My legend of the week is Ranch Direct. They ship steaks to you. Uh-huh. Big fan of them. I got...
Fuck. Is this like a sponsor? Because you're going to warn
dude,
me.
No, it's not. No.
All right, good. Omaha Steaks in retaliation,
Are you a fan of Omaha
Steaks? It's a steak
off. Omaha Steaks, yes.
Doug, where the fuck are you going?
I'm going to piss again. I hydrate. Because women tell me it'll keep me alive, and then I have to leave my fucking podcast to piss. Fortunately, unlike our Andy Dick story we just heard, you know I'm actually pissing and not going to do blow like Andy Dick does on the Adam Carolla podcast.
That was some nice choice red meat to throw out there before the pee break.
Dude, my first show was with Andy Dick.
He's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
Luck.
Andy, finish off your plug.
Dude, my plug, Ranch Direct, what up?
I'm missing from 3-point range so you can hear it.
Dude, my legend of the week is Dan for...
This is like a motherfucker.
How did you come across Steak Direct?
Ranch Direct.
All right.
My buddy Matt hooked me up with them because my favorite steaks, I already forget the name, but they closed. And so, Bel Campo, they closed. So I was like, where do I get good steaks? Ranch Direct is where I got them. I got, when he signed up, dude, I signed up, they got me, they sent me 5 pounds of ground beef.
5 pounds?
That's part of the membership, yeah. Dude, it's not even a plug. Is Omaha Steaks good?
Well, no, they're probably overpriced, so whatever I missed, yes, email me the link to, I just like Omaha Steaks because they come small. I'm a very small eater, so you can get a 4-ounce steak with no fat that you have to trim off of it. But they, everything's a special. The special, oh, if you order today, 40% off. And I remember calling him up, when was this ever regular price? Never. Yeah, if you get a good deal, they're not cheap. All right, what about you? Your beef of the week.
Legend.
Shit. I didn't have a legend.
Wait, he used beef for legend?
No.
Yeah.
He just used beef for legend.
Yeah. I did use
legend
beef.
Of the week is beef.
It's all amorphous. It's all just right. How you're feeling, baby.
I don't have beef with Ranch Direct.
He didn't have a beef of the week.
It's different beef.
Yeah, but
bro.
I'm saying he's using beef under the category of legend, so I'm going to use a legend under beef of the week and...
What?
You already did your beef.
I know, but you're using beef as your legend. Ground beef.
We got it.
Why?
Who's on first?
Yeah, we're doing a little...
forget it.
Abbott, Costello, and Stanhope. Who's your legend?
Morgan Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
Morgan Anderson... I was working at the Comedy Store with Annie Letterman, brilliant, and she shows up late the first night, which is on time for her, and at the last minute she runs out like, is someone gonna bring me up? And she goes and gets one of the door guys at the Comedy Store because everyone's a comic, and he went out and did a fine job. And then afterwards we went to roast battle, and I was shit-faced trying to shut my mouth. Listen, I had a great show. Don't embarrass yourself by trying to yell shit out right. And heckle because you can. But I watched this girl from Sacramento just destroy at roast battle, and I just like I'm Johnny Carson. I go, you're fucking funny, and I had Hennigan go, have her go up for Annie Letterman tomorrow, and she went up and fucking destroyed. And she's a brand new comic, so it was like, yeah, it was one of those fun things. See. I think this is more about me being able to do that.
Being nice. Yeah.
But just
I like it.
When you're done with comedy, you only find joy in watching new comics have fun with comedy. So, yeah, but she fucking destroyed. So, Morgan Anderson from Sacramento is my beef of the week.
Hell yeah. All right, my legend of the week is Chris Friedman. He was a guy who came to our show in San Francisco. Lovely guy. We're both huge Replacements fans. We had a good time smoking weed, talking. And I was just really touched by the hang. And I was glad to meet you and glad to know you. So thanks, Chris, for coming out.
Oh, shit. Hang on.
What do you got?
No. I got a
phone. You got a phone call?
Oh, yeah. I knew. He's listening live. Zelensky, a comedian that's now the president of the Ukraine, goes, God damn it, I got stiffed again on Legend of the Week. I was hoping...
He was my legend last week.
Yeah, he's been the legend a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Whose side are you on in that whole Ukraine-Russia thing?
Oh, I'm with the underdog. But I do have some proposition bets on... the color of Gatorade they're going to dump over Putin's head when he wins.
All right, Chad, what's your quote of the week?
My quote of the week comes from MacGruber. So he's having Vicky order. Vicky's impersonating him. So she's like, I'll have a small skinny latte. And he's like, no. MacGruber would never order that. I'm all about the large Tazo tea.
That's funny. Surprising pick.
I'm going to close this one out. I'll let...
Hey, Ron, you got a quote? I'll go quote.
From the Batman by any chance?
I'm trying not to.
No, you have to now.
I'll go quote of the week real quick. I'll go...
Pow, bam.
Yes, that's his quote of the week is Batman.
On my
pow, bam.
Yeah. my quote of the week's from the Patriots book I'm reading by Seth Wickersham. And it's interesting to me that like a lot of these relationships and these... big sports franchises that have great success, they end up breaking up because they're just not nice to each other. Like Jerry West and Phil Jackson couldn't coexist with the Lakers because Phil Jackson wasn't like complimentary to Jerry West. Even though they're these two great basketball minds that are ostensibly very tough, it just hurt Jerry West's feeling that Phil Jackson wouldn't be nice to him. And what broke up Tom Brady and Belichick was the same thing. Like, so Brady plays with a torn thumb. Like his thumb is just totally shredded. He ends up playing, he plays well. And they asked Bill Belichick in the press conference afterwards, they're like, how tough is Tom Brady? And he goes, yeah, pretty tough. But, it's not like he had open heart surgery. and just makes comments like that all the time. Refuses to give credit to Tom Brady under the kind of philosophy that he doesn't want one player to stick out too much. But it's just weird to me that these dudes couldn't show love when it would have extended their success.
I like it.
What's your quote of the week?
My quote of the week is from myself. That movie I did, The Road Dog, ask me when it's coming out.
When's it coming out?
Posthumously. Good night.
Whoa. Do you know something we
don't? Yes.
Yeah.
No, I thought that was the wrap. I thought we did this and we're done.
We can end it there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought this was at the end of the thing. That's why I saved that.
I think that was a nice landing for it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Doug. It was a fucking honor to have you on here. Yeah.
Thanks for coming out.
We can keep chilling, too. If you want to hang out and drink.
No, I'm going to go down and smoke a real cigarette.
Yeah.
And see how it compares. If you guys want to keep going, I'm going to go smoke a cigarette.
No, I think
I don't know what etiquette is on anyone else's podcast.
Can I smoke that cigarette with you?
Yeah.
Let's do it. That sounds fun. I haven't had a cigarette in years.
All right.
Boom, 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 boom